So, in this episode, we're talking about Buddhist Vipassana meditation and views, and why it is you need to be prepared to let go of your views if you want to practice and obtain the real results from practicing Buddhist Vipassana meditation. And I know that is a difficult subject. I'm going to try to put it across as logically and as reasonably as I possibly can, but you do need to be aware that discovering the true nature of life will put tremendous pressure on your view structures. And the whole process of Buddhist Vipassana meditation is to correct a perverted, incorrect way of seeing, perceiving, seeing, understanding, and viewing the world, and correcting those distortions through the direct observation of conscious experience as it unfolds. Okay, so in the last episode, number two, I was talking about how we want to gain this spiritual maturity, which is this capacity to rest the mind in the moment, free of neurotic preoccupation, for a protracted period of time, to remain with an open, spacious mind with clarity that can investigate and explore the true nature of whatever impinges. In order to see the fundamental characteristics which are true of all phenomena, which is all conditioned phenomena are transient, all conditioned phenomena on account of being transient are unsatisfactory and cannot be grasped at for any kind of sense of permanent happiness, because they're transient, and that all things whatsoever are non-self. So that knowledge, that information that we gain, that wisdom that we gain into the true nature of conscious experience, corrects all our wrong views and distorted perceptions of the world. And it's out of those wrong views and distorted perceptions that craving and suffering arises. So there is what Buddhism is saying, what the Buddha is saying is there is a fundamental ignorance at work, and you have to look at life directly, free from all distortion and all bias, in order to come to understand life as it really is. And that has major implications for a meditator. Firstly, you have to therefore be willing to learn to rest the mind in the here and now, free from all grasping after views and identity, free from grasping after all security. You have to remain open and entirely vulnerable. That is true meditation. So that requires great spiritual maturity, which you develop through following the Buddhist training. So that's the first thing, is that you have to be willing to enter into meditation without any expectations, without any goal orientation, without any bias and distortion based on views that you hold about the way life should or shouldn't be. There has to be this total psychological vulnerability to life, that you're not in defensive mode whatsoever. And you learn how to do that, and it's delightful. I mean, makes it sound like, oh, that's the last thing I want, but it's actually delightful when you're there. It's so peaceful. It's wonderful. However, that is the only way you're going to get to see the truth of things. And so there is another major issue here then. It's like, what about the views that you have already adopted, that you've already formulated? Things that the ways in which you believe life should be different than it is, that it should be like this, that it shouldn't be like that. What about all those views that you come to the training with already established. And this is the difficult thing. All those, by coming to the training, we're acknowledging that nothing that we have formulated, nothing that we have adopted, nothing that we have tried has resulted in the realization of the cessation of suffering. And then we come to this training, which is saying, you know, all those views that you adopted, all those views that you formulated, all those notions that you adhere to and cling to, they're all born out of ignorance. Put it rather bluntly, but it is the case. We come to this training going, yeah, all right, okay, I acknowledge on some level I don't really understand how life works. And then the Buddha says, yeah, okay, the first thing you need to do is to give up your views. No! Often, I've seen, as a teacher, in my capacity as a teacher, I've seen it often, is that people come to the teaching assuming that the Buddha agrees with them, only to discover that indeed the Buddha does not, and that many of our views, many of our outlooks, are based on faulty information. We had formulated these views having assumed that we had understood the way life works. And now we're coming to the Buddha's teaching and saying, well, actually none of them could have worked because I'm still suffering. So, I mean, after all, what other reason is there to hold views? What are the reasons that we hold views? It's amazing when you ask that question of people, how few people are actually able to tell you why they hold views. Not why they hold that particular view, not why they believe in identity politics, or why they believe in vegetarianism, or why they believe in God, but the question of why do people hold views at all? So, we shall come on to, hopefully. Hopefully this won't be too higgledy-piggledy, although it seems to be going that way. So one of the assumptions there is about the Buddha's teaching is that it's, and I've heard this said, that it's non-sectarian. That it doesn't matter what your beliefs are, you can practice Buddhist meditation, you can practice Vipassana meditation and gain benefit thereby. Now, I have to say that I fundamentally disagree with that notion. What I've discovered through practicing Vipassana meditation is that you successively let go of all your views. And the end point to this training is having no views at all. Certainly no clinging and no adherence to any view. Because as you practice the way, as you practice the Buddha's higher teaching specifically, you are replacing views with truth. Views are not truth. Views are what we adopt in the absence of true understanding. At their very best, views are placeholders. Just holding the place on an interim basis, like a caretaker, manager. Just taking the place of truth until we come upon truth. Once we come upon truth, we no longer need the view, we no longer need the belief, because it is understood directly without any intermediary. So that's what the process of Vipassana is doing. As we go through the progress of insight, as we gain more and more insight into the true nature of what's unfolding, what we let go of are our views. So we end up, the practitioner ends up non-sectarian. They don't begin non-sectarian, they begin rammed full of views and ideas that are counter to the way life really operates. And that's both the outcome of their suffering and is the cause for more suffering. So you have to be, you when you teach Vipassana meditation, you have to teach it honestly. You have to tell people the truth. If you follow this way, those beliefs that you adhere to will come under tremendous pressure from what it is that you're actually observing. And that pressure is fundamental, because why do we hold views? We hold views because we are faced with the enormity of existence. We have assumed our own separateness, and that we are therefore separated out from the rest of the universe, which appears entirely chaotic, and we need to gain security. We need to gain some kind of substance, psychological substance. We need to hold on to things for a sense of identity. So for all these fundamental reasons, we adhere to views as a way of giving ourselves substance and security in an apparently chaotic and chaotic world. So it's those fundamental axiomatic presumptions about life that will be tested directly through Vipassana meditation. So the fundamental presuppositions, that's the word, presuppositions upon which we create the world and narrate the world, both ourselves and the external world. So this is no small matter. And so what I found in my experience is that there are some people who come to Buddhist insight meditation who have absolutely no desire to supplant those basic presuppositions upon which they've built their life. And they can't do Vipassana. They reach a point where one of two things happen. Well, everyone reaches that point. You either give up those presuppositions, those views that you hold, or you give up the meditation. It's not quite the same with Samatha meditation. I can see absolutely no reason at all why practicing Samatha meditation you couldn't retain your views. But with Vipassana, no way. So one of two things will happen. Either you'll give up your views or you'll give up the meditation. You'll stall. There will be no further progress of insight. Because were you to progress with the insight, it's going to show up your views to be unsupportable. And there's no real way of getting around that. And what I found is, say for instance, there was one chap who came along for a little while. I discovered through conversations with him that actually he was a very committed Christian, but he wanted to learn Buddhist insight meditation, and I had to say to him, well, look, you do realize that your belief in things like the creator God, of what do they call it? Well, certainly of the sovereignty of yourself as this separate eternal essence, the soul, all of that will be brought under immense pressure by what you actually see in the meditation. Do you really want to do this? And at first he was He was somewhat belligerent. Why can't, a Christian learn Buddhist insight meditation? Well, you can. It's not telling you not to do it, but is it actually really what you want? Wouldn't it actually be better to find something in the mystic Christian tradition that you would actually feel a lot more at home with, that wouldn't create such a conflict, and that you could learn to meditate? Because the Vipassana meditation is going to show you things that you aspects of life which are going to undermine those basic presuppositions. It's not anti-Christian, it's just pointing out the facts. And we can multiply that. Veganism, vegetarianism, identity politics, any kind of politics. It doesn't matter what the view structure is. If it's based on an ignorant grasp of reality through practicing Vipassana meditation, it's going to be shown up. So, in the Buddhist sutta, where the Buddha talks to the Kalamas of Kesaputta, the Buddha talks about the basis upon which we formulate, the basis for adopting and formulating views. So I put the list up for you just to help with getting your head round this. And so these are some of the ways. Now, with the sutta itself, there are lots of different translations, and I might have added one or two, added one or two myself, just or one especially to the list. But these are the sort of ways, the reasons that we adopt views. So rapport, so that's from hearing historical accounts and things like news. Watching the news, we will base our views on those kinds of reports. Tradition, so, well, my family has always voted for the Blue Party, or my family has always voted for the Red Party, therefore I vote for the Blue Party. I vote for the, I just follow in my family's footsteps. Or it could be, the tradition of the community that you live in, or the religion that you belong to, or so forth. Hearsay, so information heard but not known to be true, so we can adopt views based on that. Scriptural authority, oh my goodness, these next two, should I? I mean, these days, I mean, scriptural authority does count for an awful lot of people's views. So it's in the book, therefore I believe it. And the other one, and this is coming from the Buddha himself, logic. You know how popular logic and reason is these days, and the Buddha was saying, really, you know, that's not, you cannot ultimately base things on either scriptural authority or logic. It's got to come from direct personal experience, which is the whole premise of Vipassana meditation. Surmise, supposing something is true without evidence to confirm it, say, oh, it's probably that. Spacious reasoning, argument that appears genuine but is really fallacious. Fact or assertion offered as evidence that something is true. I mean, with a spacious reasoning, I'll go in hard with the Buddha never taught rebirth. And the kind of spacious reasoning that has to go on to justify that view is incredible, but let's not go too deeply into it. Axioms, statements or principles generally accepted to be self-evidently true, but for which there is no proof. I would just mention self in that regard. So it's a presupposition, and it's just so common sense, it's just so obviously the case that you kind of adopt it without really giving it much thought at all, and out of that you then propagate ever more expanding views. So the whole of the Buddha's teaching is saying is that is a wrong assumption. And so the whole purpose of Vipassana meditation is to get us to the point where we can actually see that that is the case. But firstly, you have to root out all these views. I saw one translation that included feelings, and you have to include feelings, especially these days. I mean, there is a whole politics based on feelings, isn't there? And that if your feelings are hurt, it's the other person's fault. So we base a lot on feelings. So we see something we don't like, it's producing a painful feeling, and therefore we're saying it's wrong, it has to change. So feelings are most definitely a base for adopting views. And out of respect for the teacher, so again, it's like not really questioning, not really thinking things through, not really looking directly for oneself, but just adopting a view just because you respect the person that's propagating it, if that's the word. So, and yeah, and then fundamental to all of the adoption of these views is the need for establishing a sense of identity, a sense of persona, a sense of meaning in life, a sense of direction in life, a sense of security amidst all of life's uncertainties. And we should also, just to round it off, we should also point out that the adoption of views does not resolve the problem of suffering, even remotely. It does not lead to the dissolving of boundaries and divisions between people. On the contrary, it reinforces division, it reinforces a sense of separation, they reinforce the sense life is all wrong. Views are to be let go of, they're to be overcome. True peace comes from the giving up and letting go of views, not through the constant reinforcing of them. So, what does this mean in practical terms, in terms of following a spiritual path and practicing Buddhist Vipassana meditation? You can't just go from wrong views to no views. We're going to rest the mind in the total uncertainty of now, without any psychological bias, distortion. We're going to just rest with the mind open, naked to whatever wants to arise. That requires spiritual maturity. So what the Buddha did, he gave the support of his mundane teaching. He suggested that people hold very lightly the twin ideas of our actions having results and of rebirth. You, through the practice of Vipassana, through the observation of the truth of Paticchasamuppada, and I would really recommend people watch the Paticchasamuppada videos as well, you come to understand that both rebirth and our actions having results are true. So as you see that it is actually the case that this is the way that life works, so you no longer need to cling to any kind of view about it. So it makes sense to adopt those twin right views of rebirth and our actions having results, and living in accordance with them, and finding out through experience what happens. And what happens is your life smooths out tremendously, because you recognize that if my life is just full of storms, interrelationship storms and trouble, and I'm feeling restless and like life is wrong, then there must be something that I'm doing, and therefore we develop some mindfulness, we make changes, we adapt, and we find that life smooths out tremendously. And so you find that you, through following the Buddhist training, your life smooths out tremendously. You develop this really genuine respect for oneself and respect for others. There's genuine humility, genuine openness, genuine compassion. And so you find that, as a consequence, you can sit and meditate and practice Buddhist Vipassana meditation with a really healthy, mature outlook. And so, yeah. But those views are held very, very lightly. And what I mean by that is that they don't create conflict. You do not have to prove anything to anyone. You adopt the views of actions having result and rebirth for one's own benefit. And because it leads to a reduction in levels of passionate clinging to life, everyone else benefits too, to that degree. But you don't have to prove anything to anyone. So you find that you do not mind that somebody else disagrees. You don't mind that someone says, "Oh, the Buddha never taught rebirth. What are you talking about?" You don't mind. I mean, I'd take issue with it. I'd take issue to it with anyone who wanted to put their case. I would put my case. But I wouldn't lose any sleep over the fact that somebody disagreed, because that's not the point of holding those views. The point of holding that views is to help adapt oneself in order to come more in line with the way life works. That's the whole purpose of the Buddha's teaching. The more you come into line with the way life really works, the less you suffer. So, hold your views lightly in your hand to such a degree that, I mean, the Buddha himself said, it is not I that disputes with the world disputes with me. And the reason he could say that is because he knew the truth. Because he knew the truth, he didn't have any beliefs. Because he didn't have any beliefs, he wasn't in conflict with anyone. Views create conflict. Views divide. And finally, you really do need to live a good mundane Buddhist life as you're going along with the training, because it's the points. There are beautiful stages in Vipassana meditation. There are beautiful, beautiful stages that you go through. But there are also some extremely difficult stages as well. And they're difficult because through your observation and investigation of experience, these axiomatic beliefs, some of them unconsciously held, come under intense pressure through what you're observing. And so that creates this pressure, the pressure between giving up the old and fully embracing the new, and not being ready to give up the old and not being ready to fully embrace the new. But the more evidence that you gain of the truth of what you're seeing can no longer be denied, then gradually those wrong perceptions, those wrong views are successively given up. And so you find that you move through these difficult stages, and then the meditation lightens up again tremendously. Another reason why it's really helpful to do all of this under proper guidance. I can't stress that enough, especially for those difficult times. So, yeah, I've gone on a bit there, but I think it was important. If there are any questions or concerns coming out of what I've said, then please do voice them, put comments in the section below, and I will endeavour to answer any of those concerns. But I think that will do for this episode. See you again soon.